to see some of y'all. I mean, it's good to see all. That sounded better in my head. I missed some of them, y'all aren't here. Of course, they'll not know that because they're not here to be able to say that. That's what I really meant. We're busy people, aren't we? Read a little bit out of a book this week about an alarm. Does anybody set an alarm in words? I had a feeling there might be a couple, but they're all a little bit older, so I set an alarm. Mary, do you set an alarm? I set an alarm. I try not. I hate alarms, quite frankly. But I do set an alarm on Sunday morning because I do try to get up early and spend a little bit of time preparing for the sermon. Trying to get my thoughts organized, and sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But isn't it fascinating that we set alarms? I mean, just think about the word in and of itself, alarm. That would indicate disaster, something's going on, something negative. I can remember a point in time in Atlanta in his life. We were in San Antonio, it was in 2003. The boys were young, we went to San Antonio for a vacation, and the boys were asleep, we were asleep, and about 2 o'clock in the morning the fire alarm goes off. And there was not immediate panic because there wasn't really a genuine awareness of what was going on. But there was ultimately concern. We need to get out of this motel room. As I woke up, because alarms don't do a very good job of waking me up initially. And so Lana was standing on the bed trying to wave at the smoke alarm to get it to go off, to turn off. And we finally had to carry the kids out of the motel. Now, fascinatingly enough, we carried them out of the motel, down the stairs, across the river, because we were staying down on the river walk. We had to go across the river. They finally shut it all off, and we got to go back. We returned, put the boys back in bed, and they never woke up. Not even budged. And so alarms don't work for my boys either. But we live an incredibly busy existence, don't we? From the moment, and so understand this, when I'm talking, I'm going to be talking more to myself this morning than any of y'all. But I hope that in the midst of this conversation, you know, it's interesting, I was talking to Kyle. Kyle preaches every other week in a small church just outside of Marble Falls in Smithwick, Texas. And, you know, I try to call him the day before I know he's going to preach, because sometimes just the conversation that he and I have gives him an opportunity to organize his thoughts a little bit. And he's like, Dad, you know, when I preach, I want it to be just a conversation. You know, when Jesus spoke, it was just conversation. He was just having a conversation. Just like friends sitting down and just visit with one another. And that's how Jesus taught. Jesus taught in a very conversational fashion. And Kyle's like, Dad, I just want it to be a conversation. So this morning, we're just going to have a conversation. We're going to have a conversation about life. We're going to have a conversation about how we approach life. And it's fascinating to me because this morning, some of y'all may have set an alarm. And it woke you up. And that from the moment you woke up, you became a firefighter. You became someone who is ready for disaster, ready to put the fire out in your life, ready to do things and accomplish tasks. I know that Monday through Saturday, that's how I wake up. I'm a busy person. If you're not sure how busy I am, talk to my wife, and she'll tell you how busy I am. And so from the moment I wake up, my mind is processing and trying to figure out what's the best approach for the day. Well, I need to do this. I need to do this. Oh, man, this happened. I've got to take care of that. Disaster, disaster. Putting fires out. Maybe you woke up this morning and thought, man, I got cows out. You know, or one's giving birth. Or, man, my neighbor's complaining. Or whatever the case may be. We wake up and we are in disaster relief mode from the beginning of time. And it becomes so frustrating. And maybe you started on your way to church and got behind somebody slow. Man, that galls me. You know, I drive a lot. And I'll be honest with you, I have a lot of conversations with my windshield. Because I get behind slow people all the time. And I'm too busy to be caught behind somebody going 10 under the speed limit. this morning, pulling out of the subdivision. I get down to where we come out of the subdivision on 501, and I look right and I look left, and here comes like four cars from the, you know, coming down from Vallecito. And I'm like, you know, Lynn and I had a good chuckle about this. You didn't know I was going to preach about this morning, so this has kind of worked out. But I'm looking and I'm gauging how fast that first car is going. And I'm pretty confident I don't want to be behind that car. So I pull out quickly so that I don't get stuck behind them. And that's how we function life. We just are in a hurry and just moving and shaking all the time, aren't we? And it can wear you out. It can wear you out. And before you know it, you're just so busy in life that you missed what's valuable. You missed what's important. You know, so I'm going to ask for some prayers for my wife this morning, okay? Because she is, many of y'all don't know this, but she, next week, on Wednesday, is going to take her first private pilot's class. So she's going to be in the air on Wednesday. Because she has decided, because, you know, we're busy people, right? She's decided, and we've decided that I travel so much, man, we need to get there what?
Faster.
Quicker, right? Quicker. And I'm all for it. So y'all just know that I'm all for this. But it was fascinating. We talked to the instructor yesterday morning. Lana put her on speakerphone, and so we're having this dialogue with this instructor. And Lana tells her, she's like, listen, we travel a lot. And so that's kind of the base principle of why I'm doing this. Kevin and I travel a lot. She's like, this year we've been to Las Vegas, Nevada twice, France, Missouri twice, and Texas once. And the instructor's reply was, wow, that's a lot of travel in the midst of COVID. And Lana's like, oh, that's just since January. And she's like, oh. And it's, you know, just hearing that out loud makes you go, are we supposed to be that busy? Are we supposed to be that busy? And I don't care what your busy is. It doesn't matter if it's selling cars or chasing cows. It really doesn't matter. We have become a people who have been consumed by doing the fleshly things of life and trying to do it as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And we have become distracted from what God has intended for us to be and do. And men, this is your fault. And women, you're not far behind. So let's look at the text this morning. What's this got to do with Samson? Well, I don't know, but, you know, a lot of us know a little bit about Samson, and I know y'all have been the only reason you've been coming every week and listening to the book of Judges is because you've been waiting for the story of Samson. And so you have this guy that are heroes to kids because he's strong, he's Superman, he's got all these abilities that just seem so outlandish and far-fetched that we kind of want to honor him, and we want to look at him, and we want to be like him. But things went wrong in Samson's life. A lot of things went wrong in Samson's life. And so in Judges chapter 13, we're going to start to see what went wrong. And oddly enough, what went wrong didn't start with Samson. Start with Samson's parents. So let's look at Judges chapter 13. It says, and the people, verse 1, this is the theme we've had for months now, and the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. Isn't it fascinating how quickly this community of people end up right back in the same spot they started? Is that just me? To me, that's fascinating. How quickly they end up right back where they were. And in our lives and in our society, we end up very much replicating or duplicating this. And it's because we're not intentional with what we do. You know, in times of comfort, we get pretty lackadaisical, don't we? I mean, sometimes when I go home at night and I'm exhausted, all I want to do is what, money?
Get rid of Brian, Richard, Peter.
That's right. You know what my wife asked me? Are you going to ride a bike tonight? And I'm like, do you know what kind of day I just had? You know, and so we have a tendency to just shut down. And so I want you guys to see that Israel is in this place because they have not chased God. They've not chased God. And so they're back in this place that mediocrity leads to. Mediocrity leads right back to where they are. And so, verse 2, there was a certain man of Zoran from the tribe of the Danites whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had no children. You heard this? Have you heard this story before through Scripture? We've heard this story, right? Where the wife is barren, and God likes using scenarios like this. God likes using situations like this where he takes the impossible and makes it possible. He takes the impossible task of a barren woman. I mean, we've seen it before with Abram and Sarah, right? We saw it with Elizabeth. And when the angel of the Lord comes to this barren woman, who isn't, I want to make sure you know this, she's not even named. She's not even named. Throughout this entire story, Samson's mama doesn't have a name. Okay? And so she had no children. And the angel of the Lord appeared, interestingly enough, to the woman and said to her, "Behold, you are barren and have not borne children, but you shall conceive and bear a son. Therefore be careful and drink no wine or strong drink, and eat nothing unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. No razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God and from the womb, and shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines." Then the woman came and told her husband, "A man of God came to meet him, and his appearance was like the appearance of the angel of God. Very awesome. I did not ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. But he said to me, 'Behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, then drink no wine.'" She regurgitates the information that the angel of the Lord tells her. She regurgitates it to her husband. Interestingly enough, that the angel of the Lord appeared to whom? The woman. Wonder what the guy's doing. Wonder how busy he is. I mean, is he off tending the flocks? Is he off chasing cows and putting them up? What's he doing? And so she comes back because she has probably created for herself an opportunity to have an interaction with God. I find it fascinating that in today's society, we don't do that. We don't take time to have an interaction with God. And so God has to slap us. Anybody in here ever been slapped by God? Where he just had to jerk a knot and you get your attention? Isn't that fascinating that he has to do that because we won't take the time to have an interaction with him? And so the husband is off doing what husbands do. Right, honey? We're off being busy. We're off being busy and taking care of the tasks that we think are the most fundamentally important things around us in our lives. That's what I do. I mean, what's my legacy going to be to my family when I'm no longer here? Is it going to be Kevin provided well? Kevin made sure I had a roof over my head? Kevin did this? Kevin did... What is my legacy? You know, I was talking to my brother who just lost his oldest son. I've been trying to talk to him every couple days. And I was talking to him Friday, and we were reminiscing about a motorcycle that my papa had that my brother said he used to drive like a maniac. Of course, he's 8 years older, so I don't remember that. And I said, "Well, hey, I bought 3 of those old motorcycles. I'll give you one." And I said, "But you have to make me a promise." I said, "Don't drive it like you used to. It's getting harder to heal. The older we get, those bumps and bruises, they don't heal like they used to when we were young." He's like, "You know, Kevin, ever since Jeffrey died, I've been super nervous." I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "I don't know what would happen if something happened to me. You got a wife, you got a daughter, daughter's divorced, got 7 grandkids. What in the world would happen?" Man, that's noble, isn't it? That's noble that we would think that way. But we need to start learning how to trust God a little bit. We need to start learning how to trust God. And so as this story moves on, it says,
Then now pray to the Lord and said, O Lord, so this is the husband, O Lord, please let the man of God whom you sent come again to us and teach us what we are to do with the child who will be born. I don't know. I'm thinking he didn't maybe believe his wife. What do you all think? I'm thinking maybe he's thinking, man, let's get some confirmation on this. Remember when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon? We talked about that, right? Gideon had several tests in mind to verify and to conclude that, are you sure this is what you want of me, God? And so here we have a very similar situation where he's like, hey, I need you to come back, and we need to talk about this again. But this is what I find fascinating here. And this is the point I kind of want you guys to see through chapter 13. Before we get into Samson's life, this is what I want you to wrap your minds around a little bit. Then Manoah prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord, please let the man of God whom you sent come again to us and teach us. But what does he want to be taught? What we are to do with the child who will be born. Any of y'all that have had kids and watched them grow up, any of y'all ever think, man, I hope he becomes a doctor? Do good in school. How many of y'all parents say that? Do good in school, right? Why? Because sometimes we're more concerned with what? With how they're going to function in the world we live in, rather than function with the Creator. We spend more time genuinely concerned and interested that they're going to be having good paying jobs, that they're going to be able to provide for their family, that they're going to be responsible people. And so we approach as parents very much from that perspective. Hey, do this. Hey, make sure you do this. I mean, until you've had a hunter in your house, it frustrates that whole system, right? He complicated my wife's life. Not mine, but my wife's life. You know, because my wife is certified math, secondary education major, and when she asks her son as a junior in high school, do you have homework? He's like, I don't do homework. We're like, duh, we figured that out. Well, why don't you do homework? He says, homework's practice, I don't need practice. And she's like, that's kind of a good point. You know, if you don't need practice. So he was always pushing against the lines. Y'all just disregard that back there, all right? Y'all just pretend I never said that. But parents become genuinely more interested in the fleshly well-being of their child than the spiritual nature of who their child will be. See, the mistakes with Samson started before Samson was ever even born. Because his daddy was way more interested in how to raise this child to accomplish a task. You're going to see it happen again when he has an opportunity to speak to the angel of the Lord. So let's continue on.
Verse 9, and God listened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came again to whom? The woman, as she sat in the field. Didn't come to him, came to her again. Because he's probably out being busy, man. So the woman ran quickly and told her husband, behold, the man who came to me the other day has appeared to me again. And the man arose and went after his wife and came to the man and said to him, are you the man who spoke to this woman? And he said, I am. And Manoah said, now, when your words come true, I find that interesting because there's an element of belief here. He's not discounting that this is going to happen. He's not discounting that what this man spoke, what the angel spoke to his wife, he's not discounting that that's going to happen. So in the midst of this story, I want to give him a few props because there is an element of belief here that's actually pretty inspired. Hey, when all of this comes true, what is this child's manner of life? What kind of question is that? What's this child's manner of life? And what is his mission? Does that sound like a dad? Let's be honest for a second. Does that sound like a dad? If you're not nodding your head up and down, I want you up here during the invitation. Because that sounds just like a dad. Give me a task. Give me a task and I'll do it. Because us men, we're good at problem solving, aren't we? Give us a task and I'll accomplish it. Hey, tell me what he's supposed to be, and I'll make sure he's that. Tell me what he's supposed to be, and I'll make sure he's that. And the angel of the Lord, verse 13, said to Manoah, of all that I said to the woman, let her be careful that she may, and he regurgitates the same information, she may not eat of anything that comes from the vine, neither let her drink wine or strong drink or eat any unclean thing. And all that I commanded, let her observe. And Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, please let us detain you and prepare a young goat for you.
He's having a conversation with an angel here. And what's he thinking about? Well, let's honor you now. You've given us some information. I mean, task-oriented. Guys, we have gotten so consumed with being task-oriented in life that sometimes we miss the essence of what we're supposed to be doing in life. And, you know, I'm going to pick on something for just a minute this morning that may make some of y'all uncomfortable, maybe not. I don't want to say that I don't care, because I do care, but I don't care. So you can figure that out here on your own. Yoga has become one of the most popular things in our society. Drives me crazy. Because shouldn't we all be yoga masters as Christians? Shouldn't we all be people who sit down and wait for God to intervene and act? Or are we just going to sit there and think about how good we should be? Are we going to sit there and connect with who we are? We have so missed it, folks, because we have not given ourselves an opportunity to interact with God. We're too busy. I'm here to tell you this morning, I'm preaching to myself. I have become so busy in my life that it has become very difficult for me to interact with God. And I justify it. I justify it by saying, well, I listen to podcasts when I'm driving. I justify it by coming up with all these convoluted things that I do to interact with God. And I'm not interacting with Yahweh God. I am not being still and allowing God to talk to me. And all I want to know from God is, what do I do next? Even when we do interact with God, we're asking, what do I do next? Give me the next task. Let me accomplish the next thing. Because then I can feel good about myself. Who likes feeling good about themselves? Yeah. And so that's what we want God. That's what we want from God. Give us something to do that I can accomplish, right? That I can do so that I feel good about me. Let's not forget that God started this story with a barren woman. One of which could not accomplish what God was going to do. But yet we're asking God for lay things in our path that we can do. So that I can go back home, sit in my recliner, and feel good about myself. Because guess what? I'm a busy guy, but I still come to preach at Bayfield Church Press on Sundays. Shame on me for feeling good about myself. Shame on me. Shame on us for being that shallow in our faith that we feel like God is doing a good work through us just because we have determined that there is this task and we're going to accomplish it. Because what you're going to see throughout Samson's life is that his parents more, and I'm going to blame the dad more, and the reason, women, I said you're not far behind, this was a point in time in society that women had no value. Their value was children. That's it. So this woman who is sitting in a field interacting with the angel of the Lord is probably feeling about this big. She probably feels minuscule because she doesn't have any value in her husband. She can't provide her husband children. And so do you think that her husband would actually come running if the angel of the Lord said, I'm not only going to give you a child, I'm going to give you a male child? I bet he came running. And don't confuse that he came running because she had an interaction with God. He came running because he's given something that he wants, a male child. Because he finds worth in that. And women, you're not so far behind because society's changed. And guess what? You're just as busy as we are. That's sad, huh? And you're just as busy as we are. You don't have time
to have an interaction with God anymore either. Because it is so low on the things that we should do that we don't even pay it any mind. We have to wait for God to slap us in the face, don't we? We have to wait until all of a sudden everything in life, we get to see it full circle. We get to see that there's no value in a lot of the things we put so much value in. Why do you think that most people have that when they're on their deathbed? I've seen it. Where the most important thing then is, guess what? An interaction with God. Because they were forced, whether it's been by health or by life circumstances, they were forced to stop. Stop chasing their own dream. Stop chasing the things that they have put value in their whole life. They were forced to stop. And when they're forced to stop, you have created an opportunity for God to interact with you. And all of a sudden, the most important thing is God. The most important thing is that intervention. An elder in the Church of Grants that I grew up in, George Romero, when he was on his deathbed, he's a great man. You know, he always scared me when I was a kid because he lost his arm in an accident, a mining accident. And so he had a hook, you know. And so from a distance, you're like, hey, that's kind of spooky. He's got a hook. And he would grab it with it, you know. But just a gentle spirit of a man. But Lynn and I no longer lived in Grants when he became ill. But I heard stories that he would have the elders from the church there in Grants come and spend time with him because the most important thing he wanted to do was spend time with God. See, when all the busyness of life stops, sometimes it's the first time in our lives we have an opportunity to see what's truly important. So the Nazarite vow is an interesting thing. And challenging, because I've kind of gone long this morning. I think it's in Numbers 6 or 26. You may have to look at both. But it's going to go through a very specific things that Samson's going to have to do. Not shave his head, not drink wine, not even eat grapes. I mean, they're very specific things and tasks, if you will, that are associated with the Nazarite vow. And so, even if you die, even if someone dies next to you, then there's a cleansing process because you can't be, it is so specific. And so what I want you to understand is that sometimes as people, we get more interested in life of trying to raise our children and influence our children, very task-oriented, and God gets left out. And that's exactly what happens to Samson. It's not really hard to see why Samson turns into what Samson turns into. Because he was trained that way. He was trained where the Nazarite vow was the most important thing. How were you trained? Were you trained that going to church was the most important thing? How were you trained? And is the heart missing it? See, his parents raised him to honor and appreciate the Nazarite vow, which he messed up completely, all right? Because his own ego got in his way. But he was trained very task-related, very physically related. And that's what we do with ourselves, that's what we do with our kids. And then we scratch our head and wonder why they don't believe in Jesus. We scratch our head and wonder why they don't go to church. Well, I don't know. Did you mandate church? Or did you communicate the heart of church? What's the difference? There's a difference between being a rule follower for the sake of following the rules and understanding the heart that's behind it. I hope you guys don't come to church because you feel obligated. I hope you come to church to hear the Word of God. I hope you come to church to see some of these beautiful smiling faces. I hope you don't go to church because you feel obligated. I want you guys to hear one thing this morning. Be still. Be still. And know that I am God. crazy. Allow God to intervene. Allow yourself an opportunity to have an interaction with Yahweh. And it's going to be uncomfortable. Friend of mine, J. Doc Poindexter, he does it in the chicken coop. He's got a chair that he puts in his chicken coop. And he sits in the chicken coop and interacts with God. Find your place. But quit being busy. And again, I'm telling myself this. There's no one in here that I trump or don't trump in the term of busy. I work 70, 80 hours a week. I'm busy. And preach on Sunday. But you know what? I've not created time to interact with God. Don't be that way. We're going to see the evidence of that through Samson's life. We're going to see the evidence of being task-oriented versus being God. You're going to see a man who was raised to understand the rules. We're going to see a man that took advantage of what God had blessed him with. We're going to see a man that's going to fail miserably. But you're also going to see a man at the end of his life, when he can't see anymore, when he can't function anymore, and he comes to interact with God. That's what you're going to see at the end of Samson's life. Exactly what I described to you about how we are. You're going to see a man that he gets so put in a hole that God has slapped him, right? God has slapped him into a different place of awareness. But sometimes it's all going to be stripped away before we allow God to intervene. Don't be that. You don't have to be. It doesn't have to get to the place there for you to have an interaction with God. That's how we end up living, but it doesn't have to be that way. We don't have to interact with God only when He slaps us and only when everything around us in life fails us. I used to tell people this, and it used to bother. Well, my dad was one of my heroes. Heroes! I loved my dad. With all of my heart. But you know what? Created a bigger image of who he was than what he wanted me to create. Because even in my dad's death, he let me down. Because he wasn't there anymore. I've become so dependent on his existence that his lack of existence created a whole big void in my life. The things around us in life don't let us down. Even the people we love the most. But God won't. God won't. He's bigger than that. He's bigger than our messes. He's bigger than my messes. He's bigger than my alarm clock, thank goodness. He's bigger than your alarm clock. Why don't we start waking up in the morning with a different frame of mind? Start affecting ourselves with Him. And allow that to flow to the people we interact with. I hope that there's been something in this story that connects with you. I'm sure the busyness connects with most of us. We still know that I take some work. Take some work. But I think it's worth it. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, I'd ask that you come and it's part of this invitation.